Hi everyone. Today, we're going to talk about wind. 2020 was a record year in this sector, with nearly 100 gigawatts of new capacity coming online globally. But from the looks of it, this record year appears to be only the start. In our 2020 New Energy Outlook, which we discussed in our January 29th show titled Modeling the Energy Future, Ants, Birds, and Doctor Strange, BNEF projects wind to grow on average 5.7% per year to 2050. This means about 147 gigawatts per year, beating last year's record every year, and growing from 6% in power supply today to 33% to 2050. And to put a bit of a point on it, on March 29th, the Biden administration announced a target to install 30 gigawatts of offshore wind in the U.S. by 2030, up from about zero today. In short, wind is growing. This week on the show, we've got two Bloomberg NEF wind analysts, Isabel Edwards and Leo Wong. They're here to tell us about what happened in 2020 to achieve record installations, where the growth in the sector is happening, and who's winning at supplying all those turbines. Our discussion is based on a report titled 2020 Global Turbine Market Shares. BNEF users can get this report on BNEF Go and the Bloomberg Terminal, BNEF.com, and the BNEF mobile app. As a reminder, BNEF does not provide investment or strategy advice, and you can hear the full disclaimer at the end of the show. I'm Mark Taylor, and you're listening to Switched On, the BNEF podcast. Hey, Izzy.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, Leo.
Hi, Mark.
Thanks for joining today. Izzy, you're in London. Leo, you're in Beijing. I'm in London. And today we're going to talk about global wind. So can you start us off by telling us what's happening in wind? So there was a huge growth last year in 2020, 59% year on year, and almost 100 gigawatts of new capacity was put online. Can you tell us how that happened?
Yep. So 2020 was a bit of a crazy year for the wind industry. We saw 90.2 gigawatts added in the onshore wind market, which is a 69% increase on last year, and then 6.5 gigawatts added in the offshore wind industry. But really, when we look at where that growth happened, it's down to two markets, which are the US and China, and both had subsidy schemes that were due to change at the end of 2020. So in the US, developers at the beginning of the year thought that production tax credit would begin to be phased out at the end of 2020. So they were rushing to get their projects online by the end of the year. And then in China, 2020 was the last year we're going to see significant build for projects that qualify for the onshore wind feed-in tariff. Leo, do you want to say anything more about that?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So looking back in the past 10 years, actually China's tremendous growth has largely been fueled by the support of government subsidies. And the 2020 is really the last year for the onshore wind projects to qualify for the feed-in tariffs. So on that regard, since everyone needs to capture the lucrative subsidies, they essentially just rushed everything. And that's how we get to this tremendous amount of capacities built in 2020.
Just really quick, can we do a quick parenthetical? Can you explain what the production tax credit is and what a feed-in tariff is for the uninitiated?
The production tax credit is a federal income tax credit that's awarded to project owners based on electricity sales. And so this year and last year, projects can qualify for 100% of the production tax credit, but it is going to be phased out every year until 2025. Leo, do you want to explain how does the feed-in tariff work in China?
So the feed-in tariff scheme in China allows the developers or asset owners to sell their power at the fixed rate. And essentially, the income comes with two parts. So the first part is essentially paid by the local grid companies, which is usually equal to the local coal power prices, right? And then the second part, which is essentially the gap, is paid by the central government's budget. So when you add those two components together, that will be the total volume for the feed-in tariffs.
Okay, so they're racing to get guaranteed income or a tax credit or a tax break on the production electricity.
Exactly. These are just some of the different ways that project owners can guarantee revenue from electricity sales on their projects. And in many markets, they're getting phased out or the governments are changing the level of subsidy that they're awarding to projects. And so there is a push among developers worldwide to qualify for the kind of highest level of government support before that is phased out.
Cool. Okay. And Leo, you mentioned that there's like some crazy activity going on in China to try to meet that deadline. Can you describe some of that?
Essentially, in 2020, China added 57.8 gigawatts of new wind farms. And to just put that into context, that's the number doubling from the 2019 level, which is another big year for China. And if you're actually comparing that number, 57.8, to the global wind installations, that's only 2 gigawatts shy of the total wind capacity added in 2019 globally, right? So that just puts everything into the perspective. And what happened in 2020 is a joint efforts from the supply side as well as the demand side. So on the supply side, we're seeing manufacturers working day and night, and they were even able to reduce the amount of the time to produce a single blade from 72 hours all the way down to 24 hours. And you are seeing the developers sending their employees to stay in the wind turbine makers' factories so that they will make sure their turbines get to build first. On the demand side, what we're seeing is that those developers were also building like crazy. In the central part of China, some teams were trying to transport the wind installation cranes to a wind farm, and it breaks down in the middle of the night. So the construction crews were driving 500 kilometers away to a service center to get the spare parts and then get back to the construction site the second day. So that just tells us like how hard those folks on the ground were trying to get those wind turbines built.
That's amazing. We'll get into this, but like the supply side alone is just really incredible. To build double the capacity that you put in the ground last year, that's quite a jolt to the supply chain, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's something we would never imagined.
Okay, so we'll get into that in a second, but there's two more things I want to touch on the context of global wind. So one is that it seems really undeterred by COVID-19, right? So 2020, the world kind of shut down, but it seems not to have affected wind at all. Can you describe why?
It looks like it hasn't affected wind at all when you look at the year-end installations. There isn't a single region worldwide where installations didn't grow compared to 2019. But when we look earlier in the year, there were a number of national lockdowns that delayed wind farms from being built. So there were restrictions on the movement of goods, so the turbines to actually get to the sites, and then on the movement of people, so like workers to go and build the wind farms. But that was relatively short-lived because construction projects were some of the first to be prioritized in terms of the people that could go back to work throughout the pandemic. So now we really don't see that much of an impact when we look at global installations.
So the projects that were in the pipeline got built, but did the pipeline keep growing? You know, are more projects being financed as well through the pandemic?
So that's where we start to see the impact of COVID-19 on the wind sector. We recorded a record year for offshore wind investments with $50 billion invested worldwide in new projects. And actually in EMEA, we saw about half of that was in EMEA, which is actually equal to the same amount that we saw invested in the onshore wind sector in EMEA. But when we look at global offshore wind financing, it was down to about $90 billion last year, down from about $120 billion in 2019. And we think that's both just because it was maybe more challenging to get parties together in order to agree on a financing agreement for a project, but also some parties that might have been willing to finance a wind farm at the start of the pandemic might have had a lower appetite for the risks posed by some of these projects by the end of the year.
How is that looking for 2021 and beyond?
So we expect 2021 to be another large year for wind. We currently are forecasting about 84 gigawatts of new wind capacity to come online.
So not as much as last year, though.
Not as much as last year. It's going to be difficult to top 2020, but still a big year. So about 75 gigawatts in the onshore wind industry and 9 gigawatts in the offshore wind industry, which is a bit of an increase in offshore based on 2020.
There's one more thing I want to touch on context before we get into the supply chain. President Biden in the U.S. announced, you know, on what, the 29th of March, I believe, that they want to build out 30 gigawatts of offshore wind by 2030 in the U.S., up from, I think, 42 now in the area between New Jersey and Long Island. That seems huge. Is it? Or is that, you know, just a few wind farms?
It's pretty big. So we currently estimate that about 23 gigawatts of offshore wind capacity will be added in the U.S. by 2030. So that's a further 7 gigawatts. And right now, there is no large-scale offshore wind installation in the U.S. The first one to come online, we think, is only going to come online in 2024. So all of that 30 gigawatts would have to be built within a 6-year period So about 4.9 gigawatts added each year over 6 years, which is really kind of logistically challenging. Some of those new projects will need to secure permits, which in the US has been challenging to date. And really all of that offshore capacity has to be built in the Northeast, where the waters are shallow enough to accommodate bottom fixed offshore wind turbines. If we look to the other markets in the US that have set offshore wind targets, they're on the West Coast and have deeper waters. So those installations are more reliant on floating wind technology, which hasn't benefited from the same cost reductions due to large deployment of commercial offshore wind installations in Europe.
And if I'm remembering correctly from your report, there currently is not a US-based offshore wind equipment supplier. Is that right?
Yes, that's quite right. So when we're looking at the global offshore wind supply chain, so essentially today, Europe and China are actually two major regions where actually they're able to produce the offshore wind turbines as well as the other equipment needed to build a wind farm. And for US, yes, we don't have a ready-to-go wind turbine manufacturing facility yet, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the existing facilities might not have a second chance to expand their facilities, upgrade the producing equipment, and get ready for the future production. So we think right now the industry have the confidence that the market will boom very soon. And besides the local content rules, just to be able to save the transportation costs will be another strong driver for them to think about setting up the local facilities.
When we look at who has secured orders so far in the US, only about 6 gigawatts of the 30 gigawatts that the US government is targeting has signed preferential supplier agreements. So there is a lot of potential for new sales for offshore wind turbines among all of the turbine players. Most of the orders to date have gone to Siemens Gamesa, and GE has secured an order as well. Vestas right now is the only company that doesn't have a preferential supplier agreement for a project in the US.
Okay, wow. So there's going to be a lot to do there. So 30 gigawatts in the US of offshore by 2030, 86 globally predicted or projected by the Bloomberg NEF in 2021. And then our new energy outlook, our outlook to 2050, predicts somewhere on the order of 100 gigawatts per year. So matching the 2020 number roughly every year out to 2050, as I recall from the report. Let's leave that there. The point is that wind is growing. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about who is supplying the wind sector. Who's building the turbines? Who's winning? Who's losing? So stay with us. So this report we're talking about today is the global wind turbine market shares. You know, who is supplying the wind sector with, well, turbines. Can you tell us a bit more just about who's playing and who is winning in global wind?
So it depends on where you look in the world. So outside of China, we're currently looking at about 5 major companies. Some of those are Vestas, the Danish turbine maker, General Electric, which is an American conglomerate, and then Siemens Gamesa, which is the leader in offshore wind. But about 5 to 10 years ago, there were many more players in the kind of ex-China market. But so we're really seeing strong market consolidation outside of China. And right now, the top 5 companies account for about 94% of all onshore wind installations outside of China.
That's huge, right? I mean, 94%, that's not a lot of room for others.
And if you're looking China, then the story is totally different, right? So in China, it's actually today one of the most fragmented wind market in the world, despite the huge volume. So looking back in the past, when we are looking at the top 3 companies, their market share is usually around 50% and leaving tremendous space for the other players. And in last year, we have more than 20 companies supplying wind turbines in China. So that's a huge market with so many players active in it. So today, Goldwind, Envision, and Mingyan are the 3 top players in the market, with a few others that belong to a larger state-owned enterprises.
So I know the global wind turbine supply market has been relatively hard to track over the years, if you're remembering that correctly. How did you actually go about doing this? Can you tell us a bit about your process or methodology for determining the market shares of these players?
Bloomberg NEF Wind Team strives to track every wind farm that was brought online in a given year in a database of projects that currently counts about 40,000 wind farms, and who supplied the turbines to those projects. So what we look for is in this exercise is projects that are in the construction phase that are entering the commercial operation phase within 2020. And we work in collaboration with the wind turbine manufacturers to come up with the final numbers for the report.
So in doing this work, you know, this is a laborious process. We've been doing this since BNEF. We've been tracking renewable energy projects since 2004. It's a labor of love, I guess you could say. The results are really interesting and they allow us to draw insights and conclusions about the market. Leo, as you were doing this last year, what did you find most surprising as you looked through the data?
When we're looking back for the numbers in 2020, obviously we're all stunned by the total amount of capacity added in 2020. But one more fine, interesting detail that really surprised all of us is really how the market share of the top three players has come down a bit. So as Izzy pointed out, globally, the wind market has been going through some market consolidation process, and it's quasi true for China as well. And for the past few years, the market share of the three leaders have been growing all the way. But this year, their market share has come down by 13 percentage points. And what happened behind the curtain is really a boom of performance from the smaller wind turbine makers who are able to double or even triple their installations year on year, because the smaller players were able to utilize their idling manufacturing capacity when the order books of the leading players were full. So in this way, the capacity was doubling or even tripling.
So really, it's just a rising tide raises all boats in this case, right? That there's more demand for projects, and then the orders get filled up for the big ones, and then there's room for the small players. That's really cool. Is that the same outside of China as well? Or do you see, that top 94% ownership amongst five players, I think you said? Is there room for smaller players outside China?
Less and less so. When we look at the global picture, GE, Goldwind, and Vestas are in the lead with over 12 gigawatts added last year. And then Envision added over 10 gigawatts. And then we see all the smaller players rank behind those top four. So we're really starting to see the gap widen between the top few players and then the smaller players. And there's the instance of Senvion, which filed for insolvency in 2019 because it was not able to kind of compete on a turbine pricing basis with the larger players and had a high degree of market concentration risk. And so the larger players, particularly Siemens Gamesa, were able to absorb Senvion's business units. So Siemens Gamesa acquired Senvion's IP and its service portfolio, which is a high margin business, and its manufacturing facilities.
So now it seems we're getting into a very different type of consolidation, right? Players that can't keep up, they get sold for parts on the cheap, I guess, right?
Exactly. They get priced out, and then the larger players are able to absorb their businesses.
Fascinating. So we've touched on this a bit, when we talked about supplying the U.S. offshore market. But can you tell us a bit about the regional aspect of supply? So, we know that Goldwind supplies in China, GE in the US. Is the market mostly or entirely regional, or is there any cross-pollination or cross-geography supply going on?
It is mostly regional. So about 70% of GE's 2020 installations came from the US. And for Goldwind, more than 90% of them came from China. And those two companies placed first and second this year, really by relying on growing demand in their home markets. Vestas, which placed third, takes a very different approach. So the US, its largest market, only accounts for 40% of its 2020 installations. And instead, Vestas supplied wind turbines to over 30 markets worldwide, which is more than double the number of countries that GE supplied turbines to. And we are starting to see some of the Chinese players grow their business outside of China, and in turn, the Western turbine makers grow their business within China. So for just Vestas and GE, China was the second largest market after the US for last year's wind installations.
So Leo, to your point earlier about, the smaller players in China being able to gain a foothold, it's sounding like it's true also for players outside of China. There's room for them too. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. So when we were looking at the numbers in 2020, so GE, Vestas, and Siemens, those three companies combined, they added around 2.4 gigawatts. It might now sound like a lot compared to the total number in China, but still that's doubling from the level in 2019 again. So looking into the future with the President Xi Jinping's announcement on carbon neutrality, the Chinese domestic players, developers, and the government agencies were also looking at additional growth in the next 5 years. So obviously, there's still abundant room for actual turbines to be built.
Let's continue to look to the future. There's a tool on BNEF.com that you guys built that looks at future market shares, which to me, honestly, I think is one of the coolest tools we have. That I love that it's not just backward looking, but it's forward looking at who is going to own the future of the market shares. Can you tell us, based on that, you know, who has the strongest pipeline and what do you see for 2021? You know, I think you've said another 86 gigawatts for this year, but who's looking to own that?
So it's looking like it'll be a similar story to this year, and that's not very surprising. So among the top five will be Vestas, GE, Goldwind, Envision, and Siemens Gamesa. And right now we have project level data for about 70% of all of the capacity that we expect will come online. So there is some room for the kind of top players to shuffle around. We don't expect too many surprises from 2021.
So in China this year, actually something new will happen. So that's the first year for the onshore wind to go completely subsidy free. And right now we're seeing a price war going on with so many turbine makers testing again and again the bottom of their turbine prices. So right now, more and more companies are looking for potentially going to the public, meaning that they need the market share to tell a good story to their investors. So now the war is still going on, and we think it's possible that the ranking will still reshuffle a little bit at the end of 2021.
Okay, cool. So I guess one final question. We've talked a lot about China, the US, Europe today, but we haven't talked about, you know, where else growth might occur. Latin America, Africa. Can you tell us a bit more about what the prospects are in those markets?
Sure. Africa is actually a region that I'm watching pretty closely. So last year we saw about a gigawatt added across the Middle East and Africa region, most of that being in North Africa and South Africa. But there were a number of countries that financed some of their first wind farms. So Mozambique is one, and there's a wind farm being built in Ethiopia and Djibouti. So there is growing interest in wind across the continent. And South Africa is now planning its next renewable energy auctions. So the government will auction about 4.8 gigawatts of onshore wind capacity over the next 3 years. So I expect the market in Africa to grow.
So it seems to be a theme that wind is growing. Leo, Izzy, thanks for joining us. So we'll be back. I think we should have you on, you know, next year to check in on the market for 2021. Leo, Izzy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Mark. Great to be on the show.
Thanks very much, Mark.
Today's episode of Switched On was edited by Rex Warner of Greystoke Media. Bloomberg NEF is a service provided by Bloomberg Finance LP and its affiliates. This recording does not constitute, nor should it be construed as, investment advice, investment recommendations, or a recommendation as to an investment or other strategy. Bloomberg NEF should not be considered as information sufficient upon which to base an investment decision. Neither Bloomberg Finance LP nor any of its affiliates makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this recording, and any liability as a result of this recording is expressly disclaimed.